Pro Football Weekly podcast is back. Thanks so much for being with us again this week. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and really excited to recap the off seasons of the Arizona Cardinals and Philadelphia Eagles with Kent Summers of azcentral.com and the Philly Voices, Jimmy Kempsky. Two great interviews that we'll bring you in just a moment. But before I do, a couple reminders. Let's get some administrative stuff out of the way. Head to iTunes if you haven't already, or even if you have, because maybe you've subscribed but haven't left a rating or a review. Maybe it's the other way around. You've already left a rating or a review, but you haven't hit that subscribe button. You need to do both. It's the best way. It's the only way to ensure that you never miss an episode of the PFW podcast. And look, things are getting ready to go dark across the NFL by the end of this week. It is mini camps, and it's going to be about a 6-week dark period after that, but not at Pro Football Weekly. We will continue looking at every club, getting through all 32 on this podcast. And again, the best way to make sure you never miss a copy is by subscribing and leaving a rating or a review. So we thank you very much in advance for that. Also, another reminder, very excited to share that our preview and fantasy magazines, the 2017 versions, officially on sale now as of yesterday, Tuesday, June 13th. You can find those at your local newsstand. Can also order copies both in print and digitally on our website, profootballweekly.com. So hope that you will get to one of those places and pick up your magazines. Very excited to get those into the readers' hands. And you should be checking out profootballweekly.com frequently regardless, of course. We've got all kinds of great stuff up there. I did a fun piece this week, it's a raging piece about me ranking the top edge rush duos in the NFL. Had a fun time with that one, so I hope you'll check it out. Yes, the AFC West is very heavily represented. We've got some great Bears coverage from Hallis Hall this week and their mandatory mini camp up at the site as well. Greg Gabriel continuing to break down the top 2018 draft eligible prospects. Took a look at Saquon Barkley this week, the exciting Penn State runner, so you'll have to go check that out. And there will be a ton of good stuff. The NFL news cycle is going to slow down, but our copy content frequency is only going to pick up, so make sure you're heading to profootballweekly.com to get all the latest news and analysis from around the league. And with all of that out of the way, I think it's time to talk some football, and we're going to do so first with Kent Summers of azcentral.com breaking down the Arizona Cardinals right now. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, it is my great pleasure to welcome in Kent Summers, the great Cardinals beat writer at AZ Central Sports. Make sure you are following his work on Twitter at Kent Summers, S-O-M-E-R-S. Kent, thanks so much for taking some time out for us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. The pleasure is definitely all ours. And I'll just launch right in. The Cardinals, an interesting team. I don't think it's too controversial to say one of the more disappointing teams in football last year, but a lot of talent and a lot of guys returning. Let's start with Carson Palmer, because I know it's been a hot topic in the way his offseason regimen has changed a little bit. What can you tell us about how maybe letting Palmer spend a little more time resting has coaxed some pretty good results, at least according to Bruce Arians and the way he's throwing?
Yeah, it really started at mid-season last year. He struggled in the first half of the season, and it wasn't all Carson Palmer. You know, his receiver, John Brown, was dealing with some health issues. Michael Floyd, another starting receiver, dropped a lot of passes, ran bad routes. But the lack of arm strength, or the decrease in arm strength, was noticeable. And at the time, through the first half of the season, you know, Bruce Arians and others would say, no, he's fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, they sort of announced that Carson Palmer was taking Wednesdays off of practice and part of Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And it led to improvement in the latter half of the season. You could tell his arm was more lively. The ball had some more zip on it, and he played much better in the second half of the season. So they've kind of continued that through this off season. He threw very little on his own in March and April, which was a dramatic change for him. During OTAs, he watched through the first couple of weeks and then participated, you know, in the last six practices or so. And he's really on a pitch count. He's going to take it easy, this summer, or at least easier than he usually does. And he's fine with that. He had to be convinced last year that it was a good thing, but seeing positive results now, he's really adapted to it.
I think I know my answer to this, Kent, but I don't suppose anyone was able to kind of persuade Bruce Arians to take his foot off the gas a little bit after some of the scares he had last season.
No, he's not. He sort of jokes about it when he says, look, I've got to get the emotion out. Keeping it inside would be detrimental to my health. And but it's only half joking. I think he really believes that he's got to coach, he's got to coach to his personality.
Sure.
And, he's a force out there. He has turned a little bit more over to assistance. I think that started a bit last year. His offensive coordinator, Harold Goodwin, is in charge of game plans now, and he lets some of his assistants do more or run practices more than he has in the past. But he's going full tilt, But it's a concern with this team. You've got Larry Fitzgerald at receiver, who turns 34 at the end of August. Palmer's 37. Arians will be 65 in October. So it's not a stretch to think, this is the year. If this team is going to get it done, this is the year it needs to do it.
You mentioned Larry Fitzgerald. We're chatting with Kent Summers of AZ Central Sports. Check him out on Twitter at Kent Summers. Larry Fitzgerald, as we tape here on Tuesday, just named the Pro Football Writers of America Good Guy Award winner for 2017. It's kind of a general question, but how much of a pleasure? Clearly, this award illustrates what a joy he is to cover off the field. But just watching this future Hall of Famer on a day-in, day-out basis and the way he has matured both on and off the field, I'm sure has been quite the treat.
Yeah, it has. Several of us have been covering him since his rookie season in 2004 and have seen a guy who, his first training camp was just 20 years old. And his first few years in the league after games, he couldn't wait to get out of the locker room. It was funny. Some of us had to complain to the NFL to get Larry to stay, and the league says they ended up finding him. And now he's the last one out of the locker room on game day. But He's great with reporters. It's not like he's going to give you controversial quotes or criticize management or any of that, but as far as breaking down a game, talking about trends in the league, other players, et cetera, he's fantastic. And nobody in the league works harder than he does. It was at many camps, it was interesting. Even, this spring, you would see younger receivers miss practice, miss reps because of hamstrings, groins, etc. But number 11 never did. I mean, he's out there all the time going full tilt, and that's how he's operated throughout the vast majority of his career, and it's one reason why he'll be in the Hall of Fame one day.
Yeah, no doubt, and a bit of a trailblazer too, I think, is one of the first guys to move inside to maybe prolong his career a little bit, has become one of the game's most deadly slot receivers now in this sort of second act of his career. Pretty fun to watch, and you mentioned the young guys is a perfect segue. Definitely want to ask you about the Grambling State rookie, Chad Williams, I believe it is. I thought I read early on after he was drafted some Anquan Boldin comparisons from Larry Fitzgerald. What have you seen from him, and how valuable of a resource is getting to learn under a Hall of Famer like that? I can't imagine a better setup.
Yeah, it's a great setup with following Larry Fitzgerald in drills. All the other receivers are sort of like ducklings following the mother duck who goes first in everything and shows them how to do it. The comparison with Anquan, Chad Williams is built much differently. What Fitzgerald meant was just hand strength. When the ball comes to him, he has tremendous strength in his hands, and he catches it, and it's hard to pry out. Now, Bruce Arians said that Chad Williams does need some work adapting to the NFL. He doesn't come back to the ball nearly enough. Stuff he got away with at Grambling that he's not going to be able to get away with in the NFL, obviously, but he certainly looks the part. He's 6'1", 210, can really run, and seems like a great kid, has a personality and a lot of charisma. So they think they found another gem in the third round, like they did with John Brown, the other receiver, and David Johnson, their running back.
Yeah, that they've had some success there, to be sure. And we'll get back to the receivers. I know Bruce Arians said he thinks he may have 10 to 12 NFL caliber players on his roster, so it will become a numbers game there. But let's stick with another rookie, the most high profile one, of course, is Hassan Reddick, and what I think is another interesting sort of pairing. He'll get a chance to learn under Carlos Dansby, but do we need to make sure we're reminding ourselves of what exactly Hassan Reddick was at Temple and what he's being asked to do now? Because I feel like with Kevin Minter's departure and Deion Buchanan's offseason surgery, and you can fill us in on that a little bit, Reddick is going to be looked to as a down-to-down, every-down guy from Jump Street, I would imagine.
Yeah, he definitely will. You know, when they said right after they drafted him, they were going to play him at inside linebacker first because he had no experience there and he needed to learn the inside spots. They had no doubt that he could rush the passer from the outside, which he did at Temple. And then Deion Buchanan, you know, his ankle continued to bother him. It lingered. It was an injury suffered in December. It lingered and never got any better. So he could miss the start of the season. So Hassan Reddick is going to start most likely against Detroit in that opener. And playing next to Carlos Dansby is invaluable. You know, Carlos is one of the brighter players in the league when it comes to understanding what offenses are trying to do to him. But it's a big learning curve for Hassan Reddick. I mean, they raved about him through the spring, but we'll see how it goes in training camp and in games. But he's a, you know, fantastic athlete, and he seems like he's very committed to studying, very serious about the game. And it sort of breaks a trend with this team. You know, under Steve Keim and Bruce Arians, their first-round picks haven't contributed much in the first year. You know, really, Buchanan's the only one. You know, right. Jonathan Cooper didn't play, and you know, Robert Comdici and DJ Humphreys all played very little, if at all, their rookie seasons. And now, you know, Hassan Reddick's going to be a full-time starter.
Yeah, that's a great point by Kent Summers. And with Reddick, just a quick refresher, mostly an edge rusher, I believe, at Temple. Played a lot with his hand in the dirt. Kind of a pre-draft darling. You mentioned the athleticism and dating all the way back to the Senior Bowl, the way he looked kind of like a natural playing on his feet. So that will be a fun transformation to watch. Let me ask you, I think it's a decent way to work this name in. For an on-field comparison, or maybe the comparison is the right word, but best case scenario, strictly on-field, do you think the Cardinals may be hoping they find Darrell Washington and get, instead of two elite years, hopefully they would say a decade instead?
They would love to have Hassan Reddick be Darrell Washington in terms of athletic ability and how he plays on the field. I think that's a stretch because Darrell Washington, when he played, was an unbelievable player, very underrated, and was just starting to get recognition as one of the best young linebackers in the league. And there wasn't a linebacker in the league who was inside linebacker who was faster than Darrell Washington. So I think that's a stretch. Hassan Reddick has great athletic ability, but it's going to take a while, I think, for him to develop in that position. And what we haven't seen yet, too, that they would still like to get to is in sub-packages, move him to the outside and use him as a pass rusher. They had a package a year ago where they had, you know, Alex Okafor, Marcus Golden, and Chandler Jones, their three outside linebackers, you know, in the game at the same time in passing situations. So I could see Reddick kind of morphing into that and rushing from the outside in obvious passing situations.
Kent, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. I heard Anquan Boldin and Chad Williams mentioned in the same sentence, so I did the same. I just remember Darrell Washington, one of the things that made him so unique was that pass rush and that blitzing ability, and I know Arizona will look to Reddick for that, obviously. Just, I don't want to spend too much time on Washington, but any surprise with Arizona not being willing to give him another chance? Did they just feel like that bridge was burned? And do you think he gets another chance in the NFL with 30 years old now, I believe?
Well, it was interesting. They were willing to take a look at him. They wanted him, you know, to come back at somewhere near the league minimum, and he refused to do that. I think ultimately he and his agent had decided, you know, he needed a fresh start somewhere else. I think at some point between now and the start of the season, someone gives him a chance. I mean, the physical skills are just too intriguing. He can do so much, and if he can still run, you know, I'm not saying he could be Darrell Washington of 2012, but, you know, he might be able to help somebody. You know, of course, the big question is, can you trust him off the field. You know, if you build game plans around him and start making him a part of your plans, is he a guy that you can count on is going to be eligible to play every Sunday? That's the big question. You know, but, you know, my dealings with Darryl, he's not a bad guy. He's always treated everybody here very, very well. He's polite. Was, you know, his teammates like him. He would have been very much welcome back in the locker room. So I think he'll get a shot somewhere.
Okay, interesting. We are chatting with Kent Summers of AZ Central Sports. Excuse me. Give him a follow on Twitter if you're not already, at Kent Summers. And we mentioned Okafor. That's one departing key defender. I would imagine, and there's one at every level, whether it's Kevin Minter or Marcus Cooper, they're all over the place. I would imagine, I'm guessing you'll agree, Calais Campbell leaves both figuratively and literally the biggest shoes to fill. What about Robert Kimdiche? You mentioned more or less a redshirt year. That's been a trend with Arizona. How confident are you that he can replace a stalwart and that the defense can still be as good as it was a year ago without Campbell?
Well, I've got to see it to believe it. I'm not saying Robert Kimdiche can't do it. He certainly has the physical skills. We saw that flash a little bit at times last year in training camp and a few times he was healthy. But, you know, Robert Kimdiche, no matter what the Cardinals say, was a disappointment last year. They blame his, you know, only playing in five games on injuries, high ankle sprain that lingered throughout the season, et cetera, et cetera. But they had a much bigger role for him in mind, and they said so after they drafted him, 20 to 30 plays a game. And then, you know, almost from the time they started practicing in May, really through November, Bruce Arians was very critical of Kimdiche. He said he needed to grow up, needed to mature, needed to learn what it took to play in the NFL, how to practice, how to study, et cetera. They say now that he's done all that, and they've been very impressed, but, you know, we'll see. He hasn't done it yet, and that's the biggest loss on this defense. You know, five starters are gone from this defense, including, you know, Tony Jefferson at safety, I think will be a significant loss. But right, replacing Calais Campbell is the toughest, I think, because he was such a force, particularly when he played inside. People just had a hard time dealing with him. And his pressure from inside is one reason Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones each had, you know, over 10 sacks for the season. And who fills that gap? I don't really know. I mean, they have a lot of very good players on the defensive line, but they don't have that one great player, and it's going to be difficult to replace Campbell.
You mentioned Tony Jefferson, Kent Summers of AZ Central Sports, one key departing member of the secondary, Marcus Cooper, another starter that leaves. How do they replace those guys? What do you think about the right corner spot opposite of Patrick Peterson? And then just to throw a bunch of questions at you here, I have to ask about Tyrann Mathieu, too, and where his health is at. And if you think, I know he's only, 25 years old, but after the wrath of injuries he's had, do you think he can return to being the same, one of the most dynamic players in football, and the guy who just received that huge contract, I think, this time last year?
Yeah, another sort of wait-and-see guy. He's, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, is he durable enough at his size to play in the NFL? But yet, you know, the two significant injuries have been freak knee injuries, torn ACLs in each knee. He's taken a long time to come back from each of those injuries. He looked very quick and fast in off-season drills. He's not wearing a brace anymore, and that was a big mental hurdle for him. He just felt so restricted by the brace. And last year, you know, there were times on the field that he was probably the Cardinals' worst defender. He played in the slot, and teams picked on him because his lateral movement and agility just wasn't there. And I think it gnaws at him, especially after that big contract. I think it really bothers him that, you know, he hasn't lived up to that yet. Yeah, I think he can. We'll see, you know, we'll see very quickly if he's the same Tyrann Mathieu, you know. And they have reshaped their secondary, you know, replacing Jefferson. They brought in Antoine Bethea, you know, the old veteran from San Francisco. They drafted Buda Baker in the second round out of Washington. You know, they're you know, trying to finagle around and replace, you know, Cooper at cornerback. Justin Bethel has the lead there. Brandon Williams is contending with him. They think those two guys have the physical ability to play in the league, but, you know, yet again, they haven't done it. So they feel good about their secondary. They think they're a little bit faster back there. They certainly think they're a little bit smarter back there, but we'll see.
And one of the most, you know, what James Betcher does, you know, obviously learning from Todd Bowles and the way that just all the responsibilities he places on his secondary. I wondered how it was going to go last year with all the turnover and every bit as much this year. So that will be interesting to monitor. Spending just a couple more minutes here with Kent Summers. Haven't even mentioned David Johnson. We're almost 18 minutes in and I haven't gotten to maybe their brightest star. What is next? What's the next bridge that he sort of needs to cross? Because it seems like it's hard to imagine him accomplishing much more in the first 2 years in the league than he already has.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that anybody can expect more than what right. he gave them last year. You know, 1,000-yard receiver, 1,000-yard rusher, 20 touchdowns, set a franchise record. I mean, he's an unbelievable talent and an incredible physical specimen. I mean, 225 pounds and just has great vision and agility and can pull away from people in the secondary if he breaks them. And maybe the best receiving running back I've seen in a long, long time, just a tremendous pair of hands. I think the worry there is overusing him. You know, mm-hmm. Bruce Arians would like to get him 30 touches a game, and he says he can do that because, you know, 5 or 8 of those are going to come via pass, and, you know, he doesn't necessarily take the beating that he would if they're going to hand him the ball. I think that's a questionable number, and maybe they need to, you know, temper the workload a little bit. But, you know, he's going to be the number one player taken, I would imagine, in most fantasy drafts, and who can argue with that?
Yeah, just an absolute stud. I have loved him since his time at Northern Iowa, just such a versatile player. You mentioned kind of the redshirt years for guys like Kim Dichie and DJ Humphreys. Now Humphreys, I guess, impressed enough last season that they're making the switch with Gerald Valdir. He goes to the blind side. How's that going? And then the offensive line as a unit, do you expect it to be an improved group in front of Palmer, kind of give him more chances?
You know, I kind of do. A lot of people have questions about that group, and I get that given the, you know, that the tackles have swapped spots, and, you know, there's a new starter at right guard and Evan Bame. But I like the group, and through the injuries last year, they developed some depth. But I think it's a very physical front that's going to be able to run the ball. DJ Humphreys showed to me last year that he has the potential to play left tackle. Mike Iupati at left guard, you know, is a former Pro Bowl player. He just has to stay healthy. A.Q. Shipley at center was better last year than I thought he would be. And, you know, I mentioned Evan Bame at right guard, a guy with fourth-round pick last year. I liked him from the beginning. I think he's going to be a very good player for this team. So, if that group stays healthy, I think they'll do a much better job protecting Palmer than last year's group.
And then just lastly for you, Kent Summers, and thank you so much for the time. Make sure you're checking out Kent Summers on Twitter at Kent Summers, and of course in AZ Central Sport, AZ Central, gosh, I keep doing that, Central Sports for all his Cardinals and NFL coverage. Let's finish where we started, back with Carson Palmer and his receivers. Do you see 10 to 12 NFL caliber receivers? Because you mentioned John Brown's health, Michael Floyd's inconsistency. Was that group a disappointment last year? And what's changed that now it's suddenly being talked about with such great depth?
Yeah, that group was a big disappointment last year. You know, really the only guy that was consistent was Larry Fitzgerald. You know, John Brown suffered from sickle cell trait, from the symptoms, from that muscle soreness, fatigue. They think they've got a really good handle on that. He looked explosive in many camps. Michael Floyd, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of drops, a lot of bad routes. No, nobody could really figure out what was going on with Michael Floyd. And then a guy who was really coming on for them, Jerron Brown, you know, tears an ACL at midseason. He's back healthy. He's running full speed. John Brown looks like, you know, the John Brown of old. They're high on Chad Williams, as we mentioned. Now, Bruce Arians is given to hyperbole. You know, you have to tone down a little bit or take a lot of what he says with a grain of salt. Are there a dozen receivers on this team that can play in the NFL? I doubt it. I mean, anybody who's been to NFL camps or followed an NFL team could probably name you phenom receivers in training camp who never did anything during the regular season. You know, when the lights came on, they just couldn't play. But it appears to be a very deep group, and we'll see. There's some inexperience there, but if the top four or five guys stay healthy, it's a very, very good group.
And Kent, I'll leave our listeners with this. When you talk about that Bruce Arians hyperbole, is the Carson Palmer Hall of Fame comment, does that fall under that? Or what was your reaction when you first heard that? Because when you go back and you look at the numbers, obviously the ring is missing, and that's what Bruce Arians said. But the numbers are pretty impressive if he could stack another year or two of really good production.
Yeah, I think that's what it will take. I think it's a really big stretch to think Carson Palmer could be in the Hall of Fame. I think it would take 2 years of this team going deep into the playoffs and him playing lights out. I mean, that's what's missing from the resume is the postseason success. I mean, it's basically one playoff win in his career, and guys with that kind of record don't get in the Hall of Fame. But that said, at age 37, he's still very, very good. You know, I know a lot of people saw the Carson Palmer in the first half of last season and think he's really fallen off. But those of us who saw the Carson Palmer in the second half of that season really believe he has something left. You know, it may be his last year, but I think he's still going to be a good player.
There you go, guys. That was your fantasy football nugget. I have already went long with Kent Summers, so I'm not asking him specifically, but if you've been listening closely, there have been several in here. Kent, again, I apologize for going long, but it's because you have all the great Cardinals information. We cannot thank you enough. This was a ton of fun, and I hope you'll come back and join us on the podcast again somewhere down the road.
I would love to. It was great having me. Thank you.
All right, yeah, thank you very much. That is, one more time, Kent Summers of AZ Central Sports. Check him out on Twitter, at Kent Summers, S-O-M-E-R-S. And that's going to do it for our Cardinals discussion on the PFW podcast.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, awesome stuff from Kent Summers there. Thank you again to him. Cardinals are very interesting. There's a lot of talent. They really bottomed out last year, but with one of the coaches I admire the most in this league, and Bruce Arians, and again, still some frontline star power, Arizona could be an interesting bounce back candidate this year. And we learned a lot more about them with Kent Summers. Before I throw it to Jimmy Kempsky to talk another potential bounce back, I don't know if they qualify as a bounce back, but I think an interesting worst to first candidate, the Philadelphia Eagles. I do want to refamiliarize you with Loot Crate first. June's Loot Crate, you'll find items from Spider-Man, Transformers, the Hulk, and DC Comics. That's right, the theme is Alter Ego. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. What is Loot Crate? Well, it's the best surprise you know is coming. It offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're more of a fanatical fashionista, you can try Loot Wear. If you want to geek out your pet, try Loot Pets. Monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to get fancy, get a bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. So Loot Crate's been on fire recently. The theme in May was Guardians. In April, they had Investigations. They've had all these awesome franchises from Stranger Things to Guardians of the Galaxy to Goonies. And they are not letting up this month with the Alter Ego franchises. I'm looking forward to potentially seeing Spider-Man featured on the t-shirt. But beyond the t-shirt, there's so much other great stuff you can receive. The only way you're going to receive it, guys, or the only way you're going to receive it at the best price possible is by heading to lootcrate.com/Shaw right now. You're going to enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. You can be the envy of your friends and get your 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Shaw. You have to do it by the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. One more time, guys. Loot Crate, it's the best surprise that you know is coming. The second best surprise that you now know is coming, that would be Jimmy Kempski of the Philly Voice. And up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, we head to Philadelphia, where Jimmy Kempski of the Philly Voice, nice enough to join the show and break down the Eagles offseason. Jimmy, thanks so much. Let me just say quickly at the top, I really enjoy your work. Jimmy is the stick figure artist extraordinaire, in addition to being the excellent Eagles beat writer. And you just have a bunch of pieces throughout the year that I really look forward to reading each year.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Of course. Let's hop right in here. You know, I think everyone, you know, starting with the quarterback logically makes sense most of the time, so I'm going to do that here. Not a great OTA period for Carson Wentz by many accounts, and I know that doesn't necessarily mean much, but if you could just kind of quickly, and I believe you're the one who coined the phrase the Wentz wobble, can you tell my listeners what that means, and then maybe just a quick refresher on where the number two overall pick was at the end of his rookie year and what's kind of transpired since then?
Yeah, it's weird. When he first got into the league, and a lot of people attributed this to the, you know, it's a different ball when you get from college into the pros, so it's a slight adjustment.
Right.
And last year during OTAs, his ball would wobble when he threw it. It, you know, looked like a wounded duck. So that was something that, you know, everyone kind of took note of. And then as training camp progressed and we got into the regular season, it kind of went away. But it's back again during these OTAs. So I guess he took a little time off and he came back and he's throwing again. But that wobble is back, which is interesting. I don't know why it would have come back, or if he's just working on things mechanically and that's just a side effect of it. But
right.
You know, throughout OTAs in the early going and even at the mini camp now, he has kind of thrown some ugly looking passes. They get there, they get to the receiver, but they're just ugly looking and probably difficult to catch on the other end.
Okay. Yeah, I assume the Wentz wobble was not Carson's dubstep theme song, so I'm glad you were able to clear that much up for us.
right.
What about the mechanics? There have been, I think, kind of some reports across the board on how big of a concern they are, and whether I saw a report somewhere, I can't remember where it was, that they maybe led to some arm fatigue or soreness last year. What does Carson, what does Doug Peterson say about that possibility?
They say almost nothing about it,
okay.
And I'm referring to Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. I mean, they'll say that they're working on things, but they're rarely ever specific about what they're working on. And then just a couple days ago, we had access to the assistant coaches, and they only talk once a year, so it's kind of a big day for us as media.
Right.
And the quarterback coach, John DeFilippo, he actually did kind of get into more specifics on what they were trying to tinker with. So really, it's just kind of his motion. They want to keep it a little more compact. He has said he had no problem with the speed of his release. He said the speed of his release is fine. It's just they kind of want to tighten it up a little bit. They want to, you know, make it a little bit of a shorter motion in terms of keeping the ball up, because they felt that he was dropping the ball, his arm, a little bit too low for their liking. And maybe that had something to do with, you know, passes sailing on him. Mm-hmm. When you look at Carson Wentz's season last year, he threw 14 interceptions, which isn't a whole hell of a lot. I mean, he threw 607 passes. And just to put that in context from a Philadelphia perspective, Donovan McNabb was eighth all-time in interception percentage. He threw an interception on 2.2% of his passes over his career. So 14 interceptions on 607 throws, it's only 2.3% of his throws.
Right.
Led to interceptions. Now, he did have a number of interceptions that were dropped. So, you know, I mean, maybe it's a little bit misleading, but certainly it wasn't a huge concern, but a lot of those interceptions, he sailed balls high, and they wound up being very easy interceptions for safeties on the back end on just overthrows.
Okay.
So, you know, that was a very clear thing that they wanted to clear up, and I think that's kind of mechanically what they wanted to do. And then some obvious things with pretty much every quarterback throughout the entirety of their career, they're always working on their footwork.
Right.
But, you know, that was something that was a focus for Wentz as well.
Okay, interesting stuff. Really good context to provide. Obviously, Wentz coming from the FCS, there was going to be an adjustment. But I know if his numbers indicate that he was a little reluctant maybe to push the ball downfield too. So maybe that's the right segue, maybe not. And you correct me at any point if I'm wrong. But Jimmy, do you have more confidence that a wide receiving core, I think maybe as bad as any in the NFL last year, and now having received Alshon Jeffery and Torrey Smith and a couple of rookies, or the corners, which wasn't the worst in the league but was definitely a weakness, and has added Patrick Robinson, Rasul Douglas, and eventually Sidney Jones, more confidence, which group are you more confident in being kind of quote-unquote fixed this year?
The wide receivers will be better, and you're dead on. I mean, if they weren't the worst wide receiver corps in the NFL last year, they were certainly in the bottom three. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you just look at what they had. Nelson Aguilar has been a bust so far, really, if we're just going to be blunt. Dorial Green-Beckham was terrible, frankly, last year. He had just an absurd number of drops on really not that many targets. And then Jordan Matthews is a nice slot receiver, but I think that's really all he is. I think that's kind of what his ceiling is. He's a nice slot receiver, and his numbers are a little bit inflated because he's the best option that they have, and they just went to him a lot. And then, you know, in previous years, his numbers were a little bit inflated because of that wonky Chip Kelly offense where they ran more plays offensively than any other team in the league, but they also faced more plays defensively than any other team in the league. So they're a little inflated that way, too.
Right.
But when you look at it, what they did this offseason, they added Alshon Jeffery, they added Torrey Smith, they added two draft picks in Mac Hollins out of North Carolina and in Shelton Gibson out of West Virginia. And one clear thing that they want to be able to do is push the ball down the field. So you have Alshon Jeffery, of course, you know, from the Chicago area. You know about what he is and you know how he wins contested catches and can get down the field and win those kinds of passes. And Torrey Smith was a guy who, you know, had his career was looking promising at one point when he was in Baltimore. He went to San Francisco and, you know, kind of fizzled out a little bit there to some degree. So he's in a situation where he comes back to Philadelphia. He's got, you know, maybe a little bit better quarterback, and he's got, you know, more weapons around him. And I think it's a better system for him than what he dealt with out in San Francisco. So, you know, the focus of the Eagles offseason was to get Wentz more weapons in their offense, and specifically guys who can get down the field. I don't know if it was so much that he was reluctant to throw the ball down the field. It's just that guys couldn't get down the field and make plays.
Right.
So, I mean, they're just kind of limited with what they can do and with what Carson Wentz had to work with. He did take shots here and there. I think you'll see him go down the field a lot more this year than he did last year. And even throughout OTAs and training camp last year and so far, you know, this year, he took far more shots than any of the other quarterbacks. So last year they had Sam Bradford and Chase Daniel in camp as well. And, I mean, it was heavily lopsided between those. I know Sam Bradford's not the best example because he's a guy that's kind of a check down guy as well. So,
right.
You know, Carson Wentz really, it was obvious that he took far more shots down the field during OTAs and minicamp and training camp than Sam Bradford did. So I think he's willing to take shots down the field, and I think he will do that this year, you know, now that he has receivers that are competent.
Okay. I do live here in Chicago and cover the Bears pretty closely the past couple of years. Jimmy, I'll tell you, you know, if Alshon Jeffery is healthy, there's no doubt in my mind that he'll be a downfield weapon for Carson Wentz. A little bit of a misnomer that Alshon, he doesn't have prototype number one speed, but he's a huge weapon vertically because of that huge frame. But it's also a massive if. I have no idea. What's the very early returns on Alshon from a health standpoint and the way he's kind of fitting into to the system there in Philly?
He's looked good. I mean, he makes catches that you know, we in Philly have kind of grown accustomed to not seeing good wide receiver play. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of amazing things out of DeSean Jackson in training camp back in the day and to a lesser degree, you know, Jeremy Maclin. But it's been a couple of years since we've seen any kind of competent wide receiver play in practice from a day-to-day basis. So plays that Alshon Jeffery makes in practice, he makes look easy. Like, I think for other wide receivers that we've been watching over the past couple of years, we go, oh, that was a good catch. But now with Alshon Jeffery, it just looks a little bit easier than the other guys kind of had to make it. So he's a guy, I mean, he made a phenomenal one-handed catch just the other day, just twisting and turning and in the end zone, caught it, got both feet down, and that's a play that no Eagles wide receiver would have made over the last couple of years. So it's certainly, he's going to be a big upgrade there.
Yeah, he's a stud when he's right. It'll be interesting to see if working on that one-year deal for the second year in a row after playing on the tag last year, where he's at come September. Very anxious to see that. Jimmy Kempsky, Eagles beat writer, the Philly Voice. Follow him on Twitter, at Jimmy Kempsky. And I do want to talk cornerbacks, too, but let's just stick with wide receivers because it is such a key part of this equation this year. You mentioned Jeremy Maclin. I believe the report came from ESPN shortly after Doug Peterson said at this time the Eagles weren't interested. ESPN says they were the runner-up to Baltimore to land Maclin services. Assuming that report is true, of course, it's a clear indication maybe the Eagles, despite the additions, aren't resting on their laurels. They don't still see an opportunity to improve this group. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think they always look for opportunities to better their roster like any other team does. In this case, I don't know, you know, how much of a push they've really made to bring in Jeremy Maclin. Look at the money that he got in Baltimore, and I haven't even given it that much attention. Mm-hmm. What did he get, like 2 years? 12
two
million?
Years, 11
that,
million,
that what it
I
was?
Believe. Yep, yep.
And then it was $6 million the first year or something like that?
I believe so.
So there's no way the Eagles could have afforded that. They're only about $3 million under the cap.
Okay.
So I mean, just for them to make that kind of move, that it would have, you know, they would have had to play it around with that quite a bit, had it been like heavily incentive laden. So I think they kind of just reached out to him because he does have the ties here in Philadelphia. It is an offense that he knows. He played under Doug Peterson in Kansas City. Obviously, that offense is very similar to what Andy Reid ran here when they drafted Maclin. I think, what was it, back in 2009 or 2010. Mm-hmm. So he is familiar with the area. He did not necessarily really want to leave here, but he got an offer that he kind of couldn't turn down from Kansas City. So he likes the area. He knows the offense. And it would make sense for him to play in Philadelphia for a year or so, kind of maximize his value once again and maybe hit the open market again. So I think the Eagles are just kind of putting a feeler out, but there's no way they were going to contend with the kind of money that he got in Baltimore.
Okay, that makes sense. And let's switch it back to the corners real quick, Jimmy. Rasul Douglas, a nice player. I know that length is really intriguing. He's also a little speed deficient. That's what allowed him to fall into the second day of the draft. And again, everyone's in shorts, and that's where he can't even show his best traits. But how impressive has he been, and is it more him? Is it more an illustration of maybe the lack of other options at corner that we're spending so much time hearing about him?
He's looked good. I mean, it's early. And like you said, they're in shorts. If there is one position that you kind of start to evaluate a little bit in OTAs when they're just in shells and shorts, it is wide receiver or cornerback, because, you know, they can't jam or anything. Like, they can't jam hard anyway. Mm-hmm. In this time of year, so that element is eliminated to some degree. But you do get to see, you know, can receivers catch, can corners stick with wide receivers? So, you know, it's certainly more of a, you can see things a little bit more there than you can, for example, with offensive line versus defensive line. And what I've seen so far out of him is that he's always looking for the football, and that's pretty evident from what he did in college when he led the NCAA at West Virginia with 8 interceptions his senior year. So he's a guy that, you know, well, in the past, you look at Philadelphia Eagles cornerbacks, I don't know really how familiar you are with you know, the way they've played, but they almost never have had a guy that really looks for the football. The last guy that they really had that was kind of a ball hawk was Asante Samuel. And then once he was gone, they just didn't have, they don't have guys that even really look for the football and look to make plays. It looks like, you know, it's almost like they back turns all the time when they're covering receivers. And Douglas is a guy, he always knows where the football is. So he's done a great job getting his hands on footballs. I haven't seen him pick anything off yet, but he's done a great job breaking on routes. I think he's a very cerebral player, but he's also always looking to make a big play. And I think that's what kind of appealed to Jim Schwartz and Joe Douglas here in Philadelphia. As you mentioned, he is a little speed deficient. If you look at his 40 time, I don't remember exactly what it was, in his 4.55 or something like that. But he's in the 18th percentile among all cornerbacks that have competed at the combine since 1999. And when you have guys like that, they are susceptible to the deep ball. He got beat on a deep ball yesterday by a guy named Marcus Johnson, who was, you know, on the practice squad last year. So you do worry about that a little bit. And he kind of mirrors some degree what they have in Jalen Mills, in that they can both kind of cover. They're both confident players, but they are speed deficient. And I think you have to give both of those guys a little bit more help over the top than you would other cornerbacks. But he is a guy with size. He does make plays. So, you know, that's why. But the speed element, or lack thereof, is why he was available at the end of the third round. But so far he has looked good, and he will contend for a starting job.
Okay, interesting stuff. And I guess, you know, obviously Jim Schwartz can afford to look for guys who maybe aren't total flyers, because that kind of works in his scheme. And he also has the flexibility of two excellent corners in Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod, and then, of course, what they have up front. And I do want to ask you about the new pass rushers. Let me know what you think about – there's a trio of them, I believe, in Derek Barnett and Tim Jernigan, and then Chris Long, Jernigan switching positions. I'm throwing a lot at you, but I'm intrigued by this edge rush stable and how they may be able to complement Fletcher Cox. What say you about the way this is coming together?
Barnett's looked good. He's gone up against Lane Johnson quite a bit. Lane Johnson's very athletic, very offensive tackle in this league. Lane Johnson's been playing left tackle so far throughout OTAs and minicamp because Tim Peters missed OTAs, and they barely have practice at all when he is even there, because he's 36 years old and they kind of want to save his body for when it matters. So it's given Lane Johnson a lot of time at left tackle, because eventually he's going to slide over there. So maybe it's a little bit of an adjustment for Lane Johnson as well. But he's gone up against Derek Barnett quite a bit, and Barnett's gotten the best of him quite a few times. So that's been interesting to see. The thing about Barnett is he has a great dip and bend around the edge, and he's outstanding with his hands. So he does a great job hand fighting with his opponent, and then being able to bend around that edge. Once he gets those hands down, he can bend around that edge, and there's nothing offensive lineman can do about it than try to hold him. So that he's shown that off already in OTAs and minicamp. The one thing that he maybe didn't really have in college was sort of a complementary inside move, like an inside spin or some kind of, and he didn't really convert speed to power all that well in college. Mm-hmm. But, that if you want to call him a quote-unquote one-trick pony, it's a great trick. he's going to get to the quarterback just on that alone. But I think the Eagles would love to do is develop a secondary pass rush move with him. And if they can do that, then he could be a really, really good player in the NFL, as opposed to just kind of a guy that has to rely on that one, albeit devastating, move. Now, you talk about the other guys, Chris Long. Chris Long comes in, obviously played with the Patriots, won a Super Bowl last year. I think he was unhappy with his playing time last year. He'll come in here, and it'll be interesting to see how their rotation shakes out along at defensive end, because they have a bunch of them. So Brandon Graham's a really good player. They have Vinny Curry, who they paid a lot of money to a year ago, but kind of was frankly a disappointment last year. So he wants to get back to where he was when they gave him the money that they thought he deserved based on potential. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Long comes in, another really solid player who's been in the league for a long time, knows how to get to the quarterback. So I haven't really watched him too much, again, because as I mentioned earlier, offensive line versus defensive line, you can't really tell too much when they're in shells and shorts, but when we get into training camp, I'll be a little bit more focused on him. But certainly they have a lot of depth, and they have some quality players at defensive end on the edge.
And then just one more to ask you about. Like Alshon, I think Timmy Jernigan is someone who may be really motivated after getting traded from Baltimore, and I think switching roles, is he playing outside? Is he playing inside? And do you think that Jim Schwartz's upfield scheme is the way to bring out the best in this former, I think, second-round pick of the Ravens?
Yeah, he's playing inside, and in Jim Schwartz's scheme, it's all attack. I mean, he wants his defensive linemen attacking. They're not holding up blockers and two gapping, looking to play the run, but they're certainly not trying to hold up offensive linemen so that the linebackers behind them can make the play. I mean, they're the ones who Jim Schwartz wants making the play. So they're going to attack one gap, and they're going to try to get upfield and wreak havoc in the backfield, harassing quarterbacks and stopping running backs for rushes for loss. So I think that suits his skill set well. I think he does a good job kind of penetrating and being a disruptive player, as opposed to kind of holding guys up and anchoring and kind of setting things up for the guys behind him. So I think it's a good fit for him in Philadelphia. Now, I don't want to say that's what he did in Baltimore. I really don't. I'm not well versed in exactly what they did in Baltimore with him, but certainly what he's looked good so far in OTAs and minicamp for the limited, kind of things that you can see with him. But he does look explosive. He does look like he can be that penetrating force.
Just a couple minutes left here with Jimmy Kempsky, the Eagles beat writer at the Philly Voice. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Jimmy Kempsky. And you mentioned Jason Peters still getting it done at, age 35 or so. I thought I saw somewhere, and you just mentioned he wasn't at OTAs. Any relation to his contract, and do you think that's anything the Eagles have to be a little bit worried about, that Peters, whether he'll get in eventually?
Yeah, he was talking. So we were allowed to grab players as they were coming off the field yesterday, and he talked at the same time as Marcus Smith. So Marcus Smith's been a total bust, but I was interested in hearing what he had to say about why he missed OTAs too.
Right.
So I missed the Peters interview, but apparently he did say that he was looking for some kind of alteration to his deal because he didn't want to go into every offseason wondering whether or not they were going to release him or not. And you know, heading into this season, he's going to count for more than $10 million on the cap. I think it's even more than $11 million, if I'm not mistaken. But he counts for a significant amount of money on the cap, and he is 35, so
he does
kind of have to worry every year about whether he's going to stick on the team, and he doesn't want to have to do that. So he does, you know, I think he wanted some kind of commitment that he's going to, you know, be able to stick with the team if he so chooses to. So I don't know exactly what he's looking for there, but I do understand his concern heading into every offseason, wondering whether he's going to be, you know, sort of a cap casualty or not.
Okay, yeah, and of course the Eagles have, you know, really a left tackle in waiting, both in terms of contract and athleticism in Lane Johnson, although he hasn't been entirely dependable, I know. But on paper, that offensive line looks really good. Carson Wentz's supporting staff across the board looks a lot better. Jimmy, I think I have just enough time to run through these three quick questions. Most improved position group after this offseason, what do you think?
Wide receiver. I mean, as we mentioned earlier, it was the worst. In my view, it was the worst wide receiver corps in the NFL. Just adding Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith alone will help that group, you know, enormously. And then, like I mentioned, they did draft guys in the fourth and fifth round. You know, I don't know what they'll produce in year one or even year two, but you know, certainly there is a big emphasis on that position this offseason. They'll be better right off the bat just with Alshon Jeffrey.
And I may be being redundant. If so, I apologize. Is corner the biggest remaining concern, or where else are you looking?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they're in trouble there. When you head into any offseason and, you know, their number one corner is probably Jalen Mills. Jalen Mills, you know, he showed us, you know, a little bit last year, but on the whole, just, you know, he struggled more than – there's more bad than good last year. But, you know, I think he gets a little bit of a pass because he was a seventh-round pick and he was a rookie, and he gave you more than maybe what you expected out of him. But when he's your number one corner heading into year two, it's not good. It did sign Patrick Robinson, who, you know, made a lot of money a couple of years ago. When he signed with the Colts, I believe, a decent year with the Chargers a couple of years ago.
Right.
Signed with the Colts, kind of flamed out there, and now had outside versatility, but he'd rather have something better. We mentioned Rasul Douglas. We mentioned Sidney Jones. So they do have two guys that they drafted. Sidney Jones probably isn't going to be much of a help this year. He may play toward the back end of the season. We'll see about that. But in my view, he's more of a guy that's going to help you long-term than he is short-term. So I don't think they're totally in a terrible spot long-term in corner, but just looking solely at the 2017 season, I do think they're going to struggle once again to cover a really good receiver from the outside.
Okay, interesting. And that's a tough division to say that. But lastly for you, Jimmy Kemsky, the Philly Voice, awesome information. Sorry for going a little long. It's because your info is so good. A fantasy football nugget. It can be a sleeper. It can be a shoe-in. Give the fantasy football fans one thing to chew on as we head out.
Yeah, I think... it's kind of a joke locally in that, you know, every year is going to be Zach Ertz's quote-unquote breakout year.
Right.
And his numbers have improved every year going from his rookie year to present. The one thing he doesn't really do much of is catch touchdowns, so it doesn't really help you much in terms of fantasy football value. But every year it seems like his numbers get better. And then also the last couple of years he was hurt in the beginning of the year, both last year and the year before. The year before was a hernia last year. It was he got hurt week one. I forget exactly what. It was the bone by his shoulder, and that really slowed him up. So the last 2 years, he really turned it on at the end of the year. So if he can put up the kind of numbers that he did in the second half of the year, the last 2 years over a full season, then he's a guy that can be like a top five type tight producing tight end in the NFL in terms of yards.
Interesting. All right, so a name to keep an eye on. And, yeah, we do generally look for those guys that finished strong the previous year. So great information from Jimmy Kemsky, the Philly Voice. Check out his work there, of course, and on Twitter, at Jimmy Kemsky. I know I will be anxiously awaiting your roster age breakdown that normally comes later in the summer. It's one of my favorite pieces I wait for. And, Jimmy, thank you so much. I'm sorry for going long, but we really appreciate you taking the time, and I hope to get you back on the program as the season gets a little closer.
No, happy to come on, Arthur. Really appreciate it.
All right, once again, Jimmy Kemsky of the Philly Voice, and a big thank you to him. And there you have it, your Cardinals and Eagles off-season recaps. Nice and tidy and bundled in this Pro Football Weekly podcast with two excellent beat writers and a host who pretends like he knows what he's talking about. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I had a ton of fun bringing you this podcast as I do each week. And also as I do weekly, one more reminder at the bottom of the show to head to iTunes and please subscribe to the PFW podcast. Leave us a rating and a review while you are there. Also a reminder to head to your local newsstand and pick up both our 2017 preview and 2017 fantasy magazines. They're available for purchase now. You can also find them at our website, www.profootballweekly.com. One more big thank you to Kent Summers of azcentral.com and Jimmy Kempsky of phillyvoice.com. Also, Loot Crate, our awesome sponsor. Make sure you are getting your loot on. It's the best surprise you know is coming. And the biggest thank you of all goes to you guys for being with me again this week on the PFW podcast. As I said, guys, things are about to get real quiet across the NFL, but not at ProFootballWeekly.com. So come back next week for the pod. Come back for the next several, because we are going to keep going. We got a bunch of teams to get through yet, and we're having a ton of fun doing it. So thank you again for being with us this week, and I look forward to chatting with you real soon on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.